jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hip it, ever hip, hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, rap. I will definitely call you back later, then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the end of the week. That means we have a couple of friends here in studio that we're going to talk about the news of the week with them and with you. Today, joining me, Blake Barkley, who was an intern here several years ago, and then he was our correspondent when he went to the convention for us in 2020, and then he went to Harvard and he graduated, and now he's back getting ready to go to UCLA to study the law of AI and technology and media. Do I have that right?
You got it right.
Wow.
Man, that's going to be nice. All right. That's a, you know, way to pick a has-been topic. You know, way to study something that's like so 30 years ago. So well done. And Travis Peterson, our good friend, representing, I would describe the two of you as the opposite ends of the political spectrum, which is perfect. So Travis, welcome back. Good to have you.
Great to be here.
You've been working out. You look a little bit more.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll take it.
I love getting that question from people, which is I never get that question from people. So, all right, let's the biggest news story of the summer for sure, perhaps of the year, the debate performance last week by Joe Biden and former President Trump, of course, as well. We have ongoing ripples of this story, but you basically had an hour and a half on display, the worst any of us had ever seen Joe Biden look in public. And now everything from, you know, limiting his hours, going to bed earlier, doing day interviews. They're hoping to do damage control with this ABC interview today. It's going to air on this week on Sunday. Start with you, Travis. You know, you're certainly no Trumper. You're a Biden fan or at least a Democrat.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, it wasn't a good night. It wasn't a good night. I think, you know, the way that Biden came off as just sort of, you know, he fit right into the Sleepy Joe meme, unfortunately. People are missing a lot of, you know, the fact that Trump just kind of made up stuff for 90 minutes, too. So it certainly wasn't a great night. Neither candidate, I felt, was particularly inspiring. We'll see. The good news is for Uncle Joe is he's hit rock bottom, so there's nowhere to go now but up.
Can't get any worse.
I don't think so.
I will say the one thing, and I mentioned this the other day when we covered the debate, is agreed. Trump lied or misrepresented or got it wrong a bunch of times, of course, which is par for the course for him. Biden also lied a bunch. A lot of, you know, the sort of the debate coverage media was so obsessed with how many times Trump lied that they didn't talk about all the lies that Biden told, and I thought that was an interesting failure to cover the substance of the debate while they were focused mostly on Trump's lying versus Biden's incompetence. But anyway, Blake, your thoughts?
I mean, I don't think I expected President Biden to do poorly because, like most people, I've been watching the news and believing my eyes while the media has told us that they were lying to us. I never expected him to be unable to form a sentence the entire debate. And I'll disagree with the belief that this was his worst moment.
Oh,
I think
okay.
His moments have been awful for the past year. This is the first time we've ever been allowed to see him talk for an hour and a half straight.
And that's fair. And yeah, this is, to me, there's so many elements to this story. One of them clearly is the, oh my God, we didn't know story that the general media is representing. Well, that means that either you're a very bad liar and you did know, and you're trying to pretend now that you didn't, or you're very bad at your jobs if all of the rest of us could see and you're saying that the news people, the best news people in the country, couldn't figure out that Joe Biden was having cognitive problems until just now, right?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I think that special counsel report by the special
Robert
counsel
Hur, yeah.
is totally vindicated, and I want to see the tapes.
Right, exactly. How bad must the tapes be?
Exactly.
If they worked, because I said at the time, this is all politics. This is to show how bad Joe Biden talks in an extended session. And I thought it was purely political. And now I'm convinced it's still politically. But I think as the voters, you're entitled to see, was this really just one off day, or was this only installment number three of, you know, why did they want to hide them from us? Because they have to be horrible.
Well, I think the challenge that the White House, the people around the president have, is that they're trying to, you know, they're trying to reject the idea that he's this older guy. Mm-hmm. Like you can't reinvent the fact that he's what, 81?
82. Yeah, maybe. I got to check. It'll be 86 at the end of the second
there's
term,
no,
right?
There's no getting around that fact. And so I think sometimes the worst thing that you're people right, around presidents or elected officials can do is to try to make them something they're not. Listen, he's never been a great debater. He's always had a speech impediment. He's been a stutterer. Has he missed a step? Has he gotten older? Yeah, we're all going to get older. And here's the thing. The last year and a half, as you know, if you've watched your grandparents, sometimes you can age quickly. Now, does that necessarily mean that you're not mentally fit for office? No, not necessarily. But does it mean and 90 minutes on a debate? That's a long time. How many hours are you on the radio every morning?
Four.
And you're not quite 80, are you?
It's a lot. Andrew also doesn't have the nuclear code.
Well, that's true too. That's
nobody's
true.
I mean, asking me to make those big decisions.
I get the point. Yeah, but it's a. I mean, it's a. That's a lot.
It is, and I think what it. To be fair, I'll take your side for just a second, Travis. Nobody called for Mitch McConnell to step down.
Oh, that's absolutely not true. The media was absolutely.
Oh, I'm
calling
sorry.
For
Republicans.
That man.
Didn't
no, yeah,
call
nobody.
For Mitch
right.
McConnell
exactly.
To step down.
Yeah.
There were critics who called for it, and many of. And I remember saying, you know, man, I don't feel comfortable about this, and he, you know, this elder core in the Senate and the House has really got to go. So I tried to be consistent on it. But a lot of the same people who are now jumping up and down about Biden's got to go, I'm not sure they had the same tone when it came to Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, I think.
But the
right.
critics, the other side. But when it's partisan, it's just partisan, right?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Capitol Hill, the White House. You know, it's there are old people serving, people that we would consider to be old. There are folks serving, and there are people around them who, you know, are working their best to keep the process moving. I think at the end of the day, someone said it to me, well, I know who Joe Biden is going to have around him, and I trust those people. The people that the former president is going to have around him, I don't know or I don't trust. I mean, it's not, you know, again, we're electing a president, but there's a whole institution of people that come with that person.
Listen, I don't want to elect a shadow bureaucracy. I'm voting for a person, and I'm not confident that Joe Biden can form a sentence, so I'm certainly not confident that he can enact a policy or a vision for this country. I don't think we're even being run by Joe Biden, because the difference between him and Mitch McConnell is Mitch McConnell got back out there after he froze,
right.
And then he spoke intelligently, and you could tell that this was a man that was still with it. Joe Biden has not come and spoken to the people until this interview with a former Democratic
chief
of staff.
He was out in North Carolina the next day.
I thought he was fiery.
He was very robust.
Moment,
right? Yeah, with a teleprompter.
State of the Union.
With a teleprompter.
With a teleprompter. Yeah.
Listen, lots of great speakers use teleprompters.
Yeah, here's the difference, though. You mentioned that
he's
always had a stutter, but I watched Joe Biden in the 2012 debate when he just eviscerated Paul Ryan. It's not the same man.
And to pretend
that this is just a stutter is ridiculous. It is 12 years ago, but he made a 3-year age gap between him and Donald Trump look like 30.
Well, I agree. But again, those 3 years, think about your grandparents. Those 3 years, a lot can change.
Well, but that's the reason
that's
why
the
we're
point.
So concerned.
I get it. But we are where we are.
To Blake's point, when he was running, even in 2020, I've been watching Joe Biden for years. I mean, I've been covering the White House and thinking about these issues for years and years. And Joe has always had a stutter. Mm-hmm. He has always stumbled. He has always made gaffes, and he's always been creepy. Okay? Just all true.
Yeah.
But this was a whole different kind of that stuff. This wasn't just more of the Biden. This was, and I think you have to judge in context against their baseline. And that was the thing that I think we noticed, especially in the last couple of years and particularly the other night. But we're going to come back to this because the ABC debate thing, I think, is... This is an amazing story to me, the idea that ABC is even thinking about not releasing the raw full interview of Joe Biden is an amazing story to me. Jake's got traffic on the fives. Jake?
We're looking great on our roadways. No accidents reported by FHP and no slowdowns to tell you about. This traffic report is brought to you by Lowe's. Celebrate July 4th with savings at Lowe's. From potting soil to appliances, find everything you need to make your home pop for summer. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
So the ABC News interview with George Stephanopoulos. This is the biggest news story of the summer, and it was a story because we got raw, unfiltered access to seeing both men, okay, but particularly because of what it showed about President Biden. This is now, after the Robert Hur tapes, which have not been released, this is now another chance to see, well, is he really fantastic during the daytime when he's been napping a bunch and when he's, you know, and when he's sitting instead of standing, presumably, or whatever? Or is it going to be a train wreck? And we don't know until it happens. But the idea that a news organization would even consider not releasing the full unedited version of that speaks volumes about their judgment, in my opinion. Do you disagree?
I mean, I think media outlets at all levels have arrangements that they make for interviews. I've done it for, you know, clients, for causes, you know, this is on background. Hey, this is off the record.
Of course.
Right. That's, you know, if those arrangements were made, that's up to ABC to if they committed not to not release the whole tapes, then
I would say no to the interview. If you're forcing me to release only an edited version, I wouldn't do the interview. Because to me, that is the story. The story is not the answers cherry picked out of the total. The answer is, or the story is how he performs in the live thing. Blake?
I agree. I mean, the American people deserve to see him in a live setting. My expectations for the mainstream media are very low, so I'm not surprised, especially when it's George Stephanopoulos.
He's as an editorial position, he has taken a, in the last about 2 months, he's really taken an anti-Trump position on the Sunday show, which is unusual for Sunday shows. I mean, you might know it's there, but they don't come right out and say it. And he's been out and saying it for about a month, month and a half now, right?
Yeah, I think he's a convicted felon. I mean, he can't even vote for himself.
George Stephanopoulos, convicted felon?
Trump can't even vote for himself. Like, there will be no picture of him checking the ballot box.
Actually, I thought he could vote in Florida
because of the constitutional amendment, I thought.
I don't remember. I read it a couple weeks ago, and I think he will get to vote, but I don't remember the details of it. It's just kind of obscure thing. But
he's a convicted felon. Like,
for now.
Full stop.
You know, which brings us to the other big story of the week, obviously, the Supreme Court. Okay. Mm-hmm. Issues, my God, all the dump rulings that came out and some of them are enormous rulings. The Chevron, it wasn't the Chevron case, but it was a Chevron related case. We'll get to in a second. But let's talk about the immunity ruling. The court creates this totally new construct of core powers within which the president has total immunity, non-core powers within which the president has presumptive immunity and may have immunity, but it's going to depend on a case-by-case basis. And they remanded those questions back to the lower courts for fact analysis. And then the purely non-official duties that, of course, the president can be tried for after he's out of office. But then again, since so much of the evidence related to either the peripheral, non-core, or the personal would require evidence that the court seems to be excluding from consideration, the jaded view of this ruling is they've not only given him immunity and core powers, but they've given him practical immunity and everything because it's not even admissible, according to the opinion. This is a huge ruling. I made fun of it in Transgressors because it's not just what Trump might do if he gets reelected. It's what Biden could do now, especially if Biden's not calling the shots. Right, Blake?
I mean, it's possibly true. I think that the ruling is a lot more narrow. I have a more narrow interpretation of the ruling. It seems as though President Trump can't be tried for duties that could be official acts, things like ordering the Justice Department to investigate certain
people.
That's
right.
That's something.
That's one they specifically said is immune, right?
But things that they specifically said could potentially be tried for, sent back to the lower courts, or things like that inciting a lip speech the President Trump gave, part of the false elector scheme still, the organizing of it, pressuring Mike Pence. Those are all things that he still could be tried for.
That's true. And that's what they remanded back for consideration. That's right.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, a president shouldn't be completely immune. None of us should be completely immune for the totality of what we do. I think they are trying to split the baby on this because there are some things that a president shouldn't be necessarily tried for, like, you know, the official functions of the office. But it's kind of a big, like you said, so much for being strict constructionist, right? I mean, like, this is, it used to be that the liberal courts were the big judicial activists. Mm. So there's an interesting, you know, there's a dynamic here that I think is still, like Blake said, yet to be worked out.
Yeah, I was reading an article. It was from the New Yorker or something. They strict constructionism is dead, or, you know, originalism is dead. And I thought, well, I do see what the court might have been trying to do. And in a sense, but what they really struck down in my mind is the belief we have in things like checks and balances and accountability and, separation of powers is what, as I was reading it, that's what I kept feeling is, how would you ever convict him on bribery for a pardon? How would you ever convict him on foreign influence, for recognition of a diplomatic thing? It seemed to me like the Supreme Court opinion left all of that stuff to be maybes when I grew up thinking, these are kind of core things, you know?
Well, I don't entirely agree that it's getting rid of the checks and balances, because we have the check and balance of impeachment. And President Trump got impeached, and you can still impeach someone.
You can.
It's just limiting the ability of prosecutors, and specifically Clarence Thomas's concurrence limited the ability of these unelected, appointed prosecutors from the ether that get appointed to investigate your political opponents. I mean, I think they're trying to strike a balance of both giving the president the power that he needs, keeping him accountable, but then also ensuring the legitimacy of our political system. I mean, that's John Roberts' whole thing, is legitimizing the court and legitimizing our system. And when we start prosecuting our political opponents, legitimacy starts fading. And so that's why I think just the entire idea of prosecuting Donald Trump has been
problematic at best.
Effort.
Yeah, right. And by the way, the Thomas concurrence is very interesting, because the thing he writes about specifically is that Jack Smith has no authority. And because Jack Smith doesn't operate under an existing constitutional provision, and he was never confirmed, and he looks very much like the kind of, if he were to be a legitimate office, he looks like the kind of person that should have to be confirmed by Congress. And so, you know, he's basically a private citizen bringing a cause of action against a former president in a novel historical scenario. And
like Kenneth Starr.
But Kenneth Starr was confirmed. I don't remember the details of Kenneth Starr's scenario. But there was a special counsel law that was on the books then and has expired.
Impeachment proceedings. It's not the same as a criminal.
Well, before the impeachment, Kenneth Starr was in place. So,
Regardless, Donald Trump's biggest superpower is the stupidity of his enemies. He was saved in the primary. You can watch the polling. He was tied with DeSantis. They raid his office or indict him.
Yeah,
and
that's
all of
right.
a sudden, he's
Give
invincible
him the power.
In the primary. Now his biggest benefit is that the Democrats have been lying about Joe Biden's age and clear cognitive decline, and now he's sweeping the polls, poised to become re-election.
I'm pretty sure
and
nobody's
all
been
the
lying
Democrats
about
fault.
Joe Biden's cognitive or his age. I mean, the cognitive.
Really?
Absolutely have been lying.
Nobody has ever said that Joe Biden is a young spring chicken.
But
right?
that's an unfair
right
in
his
straw man.
He's doing somersaults in the hallways.
But then the very next day,
he's,
you see
he's
him
like
on...
this in public, but catch him when he's, you know, behind the scenes with us. He's very lively in these conversations.
The country's going to have a choice between these two folks.
I agree.
It can be
definitely
your crazy drunk uncle who's a felon, or it can be your papa who falls asleep after a big
four
meal.
So
it's more like your papa who passed away for you.
I will say this. The part I agree with you about, Blake, is we wouldn't generally describe former President Trump as a restrained individual. I mean, right? He's
Fair.
Been pretty quiet.
Yes.
And that's...
It's eerie. It's like when the velociraptor in Jurassic Park could move
waiting.
The door handle.
Yeah, right.
It's like, what's going on?
And
to Blake's point, he doesn't really have to do a whole lot because the Democrats, we're not on our A game right now.
This is going to sound like an incredibly condescending thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've been pretty impressed that President Trump was able to keep his mouth shut this long and watch his enemies flay themselves.
Well, some
in
of
the
his
fire.
Benefit is also that the media is more selective in covering what he says. I mean,
that's
he goes
true.
Insane on Truth Social every day, but nobody reads that. So.
Right. I think now you have to be a member to actually read it. It's so frustrating. I don't
no
even
idea.
Care. All right. So let's talk about the other big Supreme Court opinion, though, because huge things happened at the Supreme Court this session. And the Chevron reversal is, I mean, the Wall Street Journal had it right. This is, Americans don't understand it. We don't care. It's not exciting and thrilling. But reversing Chevron deference was a massive change in the way the law and courts interact with the administrative state in the United States. Blake, you want to take a stab at kind of, I don't know, explaining it? Because people don't
right.
realize
why this
matters.
I mean,
why,
yeah, I like what Neil Gorsuch said. This lays a tomb on Chevron that nobody will miss. Chevron basically gave the administrative bureaucratic state, all these bureaucrats who none of us elect but appoint and sit in government positions in D.C. for decades, tons of power. So if you had an environmental agency look at your yard and they saw a puddle and they decided it was a wetland, if you appealed that to the court would defer to the administrative state.
Right.
Now that Chevron's gone, this reverses that. And so it's not entirely saying that these experts, you know,
have
at
no
the bureaucratic
power.
State right. have no power, but it's saying that you have to come to a court and argue for your power. It doesn't innately give it to them. So I think it's a huge victory for limited government. I think it's a huge victory for the average American, especially small businesses who don't have the lobbying wherewithal that major corporations have. And I also think that if you're a Democrat, you should be super excited because this is going to limit the power of Project 2025. You know, that whole plan to put all these conservative loyalists in government when Donald Trump wins the election?
Because they're still going to be accountable to the courts.
And yeah.
Yeah, the idea that the administrative agencies would be able to make the calls on all of these different, whether there's an ambiguity in the law or whether they're just trying to abuse the law, that there was deference given to them because they're supposedly experts, which may well be operating out of bias or outside of their coloring outside the lines or shading the nature of the lines. And now all of a sudden, look, courts are supposed to interpret law. How about that? Isn't that a wild thing? I'll get your reaction in a second, Travis. Jake's got traffic on the fives.
All right, we're looking great out there on the roadways. No accidents to report, no slowdowns to tell you about. If you do see anything out there on the roadways, let us know. 437-1620. I'm Jake Walker with traffic on the fives.
Travis, your thoughts about the Chevron reversal?
If you're a K Street lobbyist, you're doing backflips right now. I mean, the Chevron reversal, I do understand where Blake is going, but the idea that, all of these agencies have a rulemaking process. Congress passes a law, then these agencies have a very public rulemaking process where all the stakeholders can come in and say, here's how we think you should interpret this. Those rules are what's supposed to govern that whole sort of interpretation of those laws. So the idea that these are some sort of big deep state, actors working in the shadows is a little overblown. But I do think there will be some repercussions from this because agencies are going to have to figure out how to write better rules. Lawyers and lobbyists are going to get rich because it's going to make what actually goes into the law that much more important. And then with all the upcoming sort of ongoing, litigation mm-hmm. that's going to result from this, we should all be careful what we wish for.
Yeah, I think that there's some element of concern because, as you say, now the lobbyists who are going to be able to shape the legislators in terms of what they do is going to be more important. But the idea that the people who were, even if they were going through a public process of hearings and talking about it, could then do what they judged best and then get that judgment deferred to by the court because they know what's best, was itself a violation of, again, that principle of separation of powers. The, too much authority in hearing in any one place is eventually going to lead to bad outcomes. And to me, the courts are supposed to be the check on that, especially with unelected administrators. And now we're back to that being the way it should be, which is kind of the idea, right?
Yeah, I'll also just say let's pour one out for the poor law professors who the Chevron deference whole concept was so convoluted and complicated that their entire legal branches of law schools built around interpreting this, and they've all lost their big. Think of the academics.
It does feel that's a little bit like the, the Gordian knot? Is that the one where they come in and they cut one little piece and it all evaporates? And that's kind of like, this is so complicated. No, it's not. It's overturned. I always think about that when it comes to things like insurance and other complicated topics where people really do make an awful lot of their legal living off of the complexity of it.
Right.
And if something were simple and easy, all of a sudden, oh no.
Well, I'm glad I'm starting law school this fall.
That's right. You'll be able to capitalize.
Right.
back to Biden for just one second. I want to get your prediction because you guys both see this very differently from each other for sure and perhaps from me as well. Travis, does Biden stay in? Do you want him to stay in? And if he drops out, who's in?
Biden stays in.
Okay, so that's it.
If he were to drop out, you have Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris duking it out.
Okay.
To see who's going to be the nominee.
Blake, does he drop out?
He can't. If he drops out, it's an admission that they've been lying to us about his mental state and he would have to resign. And Kamala Harris would be stained by that scandal. Gavin Newsom will not be the nominee. You can't jump over the first black female vice president.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.